This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, Jeremiah. Brayton Wilson at WGR Sports Radio 550 in Buffalo. Hope you've been well during these times. So obviously you've been with the organization for a few years now, and you get promoted to being the director of scouting. How unique has this time been for you? With everything being virtual since March with COVID and everything, and how have you had to adjust on the fly with everything that's gone on?
I think it's been unique, just as it has been for anyone. And talking about hockey, but I think across all businesses. But the unique part, where I think, would be setting a little bit of a different process to reevaluate the work that had previously been done for the draft and utilizing different video, watching players from different regions and being creative about setting up the best process for leading into this draft. The other unique thing would be the prospect interview process, where a lot of it could be done in person. And obviously with travel restrictions and everything that complicates the world today, I've become much more adept at utilizing Zoom. And I think a lot of the prospects, being 17, 18 years old, they're more comfortable than we were in terms of the technology. But I think that was the unique portion of it. Everything else in terms of meetings, the discussion of players, framing out how they project, is just the same as it always would be.
Hi, Jeremiah. Lance Lysowski from Buffalo News. Hope you're doing well. Thanks again for doing this. Could you provide more insight into maybe how you guys as a staff split up the responsibility of going back and reviewing these prospects? You're obviously working with fewer scouts than what a staff would traditionally be working with ahead of a draft. How would you really prioritize who you wanted to look at? I mean, and how much did analytics sort of play a role in the players you were looking at this time around?
Yep. Thanks, Lance. First and foremost, obviously analytics were used in multiple ways to figure out players that were accomplishing certain things at their respective levels. We did have existing organizational information that was utilized, and we had existing scouts who were well aware of the territories that they were responsible for covering previous to the changes that occurred here. So we started off with a good deck of players to evaluate, and how we split it up was a little bit interesting, and I like the way it has worked out and played out. Given the fact that there were changes and we were tasked with relooking at it, myself coming from pro scouting, we had guys that had the existing information from amateur, but we also had, with nothing else going on in the hockey world, the ability to involve people in development and get a unique perspective into what challenges might occur into players from draft date moving forward and what might need to be overcome, what they've seen from their experiences. But obviously utilizing video, we would set out the staff to evaluate players through multiple games the way they normally would and come back with their opinions. And then we would introduce things that we knew that they were accomplishing from an analytical perspective and ask them, how do they accomplish this? Because the numbers are incredibly valuable because they represent fact, but they don't tell you how it's happening. They don't tell you if it projects or if it doesn't project. So then when we revisited the players again through video, we'd ask the hows and whys of those questions, meet, and where necessary, create crossover between groups, put guys on different players to get different perspective, and kind of do the same thing, reevaluate, reaffirm, meet again, and then move on to other groups. It's been a little bit fluid because you always want to revisit when you're doing things in video, not in person without hockey being played. You want to remain fresh. So it's not like we watched one group moved on and haven't watched them for 2 months, frequently being revisited, getting different perspectives. And I like the way the process went.
Hey, Jeremiah, Ted Goldberg from Spectrum News in Buffalo. Thanks for hopping on. I know you mentioned kind of earlier the, you know, some of the changes and difficulties with maybe not difficulties, but just, you know, when you talk to people with Zoom and trying to get to know people kind of better, which is over these last few months, have you found it much more difficult to get to know prospects, not just as hockey players, but also trying to get to know them as people?
No, I didn't find it to be more difficult. And the reason why, and I touched on this a little bit, is the players are more comfortable and more used to that type of environment than we were. There was no guard or barrier to break down. This is every day for them. The way they communicate with family and friends. So I found that to be obvious right from the start. And again, I go back to our staff, including guys that are existing and been with us and part of this process. I've interviewed these guys face-to-face throughout the regular season as well. So we have that information and a little bit rapport built with some of the players, and it was really a non-issue.
Hi, Jeremiah. John Vogel with The Athletic. Hope all is well. Thanks for doing this, as everyone else has said. As you mentioned, there was a little book on guys you already had. When you went and redid this process, how much did guys change? Did your list change quite a bit? And also, how do you plan to handle tomorrow night? Are you guys getting together as a group, or how's that going to work out?
Yep, no, things changed a little bit. And it's just we looked at players through a little bit of a different lens, and we wanted to give them a fresh slate. Obviously, we want to take advantage of existing information, but any opinion that had previously been formed, we asked guys to drop. We asked them to remain objective and look at guys from acting as though it was day one, because we had that information to fall back on where necessary. And I think guys' opinions, they stayed the same, but they might change in a little bit of an area that might change a little bit of perspective. We asked the guys to dream a little bit, but be cognizant of what could go wrong with a player, because we don't want to leave any potential upside or projection unknown. So tell us what you think could happen with this player. If everything goes right, tell us what you think could happen when everything goes wrong. And I think sometimes guys build comfort with over time and multiple viewings of the video saying, you know what, I do believe in a little bit more. And we'd ask them different ways to express their level of confidence in that, obviously. But there were tweaks and changes here and there, even players added to the process. But I think that is to be expected with a change in approach and change in people that are overseeing it. And sorry, John, in terms of tomorrow, we'll have a group together here in the building. There are obviously travel restrictions still in place, but we've set up remote access to everyone that's been involved with this process throughout and have different ways of getting contact immediately at any point. So our guys will be available, whether they're physically here in Buffalo or not.
Hey, Jeremiah, Bill Hoppe with the Times Herald. I was just wondering, what are the general themes of this draft overall when you look at it? Do you see it heavy in one position? How deep do you think it goes as far as the first round and getting players who might be able to make an impact in a year or two? Like, what are the themes maybe that you see in this draft?
I think there are good players, and we'll talk about the first round, like you said. Of every position that are going to have the ability to have high impact in the National Hockey League, I think there are certain drop-off points or certain areas where the draft changes a little bit. I'm sure you guys follow everything, but the consensus list seemed pretty parallel around three, and things could change a little bit. But beyond that, I do think there is there's a lot of guys that are going to impact the game at a high level. I do think timeline is going to vary on an individual basis and is going to be dependent on what occurs for a lot of these players who might be changing levels or entering pro for the first time in Europe, entering NCAA and leaving junior hockey. A lot of those things are going to dictate their timeline. With the guys we pick, we're obviously going to invest in them from a development perspective and try and make the best decisions and give them the best support in order to reach their potential. Beyond that, I think there's a lot of variables that are going to affect that on a case-by-case basis.
Hi, Jeremiah. Thanks for doing this. This is John Mattis from The Score. I realize this call is for the 2020 draft, but I wanted to look ahead just for a quick moment here. Scouting for the 2021 class is already underway. It's going to be a challenge for everyone, a strange year for everyone with travel restrictions, best on best tournaments canceled, schedules condensed in certain leagues. I'm curious, how are you guys in Buffalo approaching scouting that class? Like, do you maybe rely more on analytics or psychological testing to plug in those holes that are left by losing live viewings and crossover scouting, or what's just the strategy heading into next year?
No, we've discussed it, and I think we're at the mercy of government regulations in terms of travel a little bit, but having discussed it multiple times, I do think this process might make us a little bit uniquely suited to be prepared to cover that draft class, just because we have ensured that we have full coverage from a video perspective of levels all around the world. Obviously we've already had good access and good analytics, but we'll be prepared to deploy our staff for live viewings when available, but we're also going to be ready to launch out a process similar to this should it be necessary.
Hi, Jeremiah. I'm just curious, you know, is there any particular trait in a prospect that has to be there for you, whether it's, you know, hockey sense or skating or compete level? Like, is there going to be something that a Sabres prospect needs to have?
We're going to want guys that are competitive, have a strong desire to impact the game, however it is they do that, and are invested in themselves from a development perspective and burn to be hockey players. Beyond that, I do think the mix of traits that can cause a player to be projectable to the NHL level can vary on a number of things: body type, style of play. So I do think you're obviously looking for hockey sense, compete, elite traits in terms of skating, puck skills, and a body that projects to the NHL level, but I do think there can be a little bit of a variance dependent on all the other things that make up a player.
Hey, Jeremiah, Paul Hamilton from WGRZ. How you been?
Good. How are you?
Good. When you're looking at 18-year-olds, can you draft for position, or is it almost impossible because we're talking about players who likely are 1, 2, 3 years away? So can you say, all right, we need centers. I can look at centers with the 8th overall pick, or can't you do that with 18-year-olds?
I think given the age of the players in the NHL, you're trying to draft the best players available. I think if you get into need-based drafting and you see how quick rosters can change in the NHL, and you do that, I don't think it necessarily is succinct from drafting to how things are going on with your team. So you're looking for traits that you feel you value as an organization more so than position-specific decision-making.
Hey there, Jeremiah. Mike Harrington from the news here. Thanks for your time. Looking at this philosophically, what you said earlier, you needed to give guys a fresh slate. There might have been tweaks and changes. How much do you and the scouting staff and Kevin feel the need to really clean sweep a lot of things because the franchise and the organization has not been successful in the past, and kind of bring almost a completely new philosophy to the table?
I don't think it's due to anything that has happened in the past. We've certainly met when changes happened and came together about what we believe is the best process in terms of drafting, development, and making the best decisions for future Sabres. But that process is independent of what has gone on and for previous questions, what certain positional needs there could be for the Buffalo Sabres. So I don't really see them connected. They're certainly beliefs, but they are they're just that, beliefs that are formed on what is the best way to project 17 and 18 year olds to the NHL.
Hi, Jeremiah. Quick question on the upcoming draft. With the reality that the CHL, specifically the WHL and the OHL, you know, may not get started until January, it's going to cut down on your evaluation of CHL draftees to about 19 months. Would that influence you in terms of drafting CHL prospects because NCAA prospects or European prospects, your rights for them would be longer than the 2 years that normally you would have for CHL prospects to determine whether you assign them to entry-level contracts?
No, we're going to look to provide full coverage to the entire draft class and evaluate those types of things as reality sets in terms of how long the seasons are going to be, because we've kept close tabs on how things are progressing at the different levels of hockey, but they're just like everything else. There's no solid answers. When teams get up and playing, we're going to provide them full coverage and the body of work that we're provided by how many games they're going to play in the season is going to be what it is. And then we're going to make the best decisions, but we're not going to come in with any preconceived notions of certain areas that we're looking at players to come from.
Hi, Jeremiah, Lance again. So, I mean, sort of playing off of that last question, just presenting you with a hypothetical, if you have two prospects at some point in the draft that you like both players, but one's playing games in Europe already and one faces some uncertainty, I'm sure there's some development questions there. If you don't know when the player is going to play moving forward, you know, how you can really get him in a competitive environment. So does that really, you know, play a role when you're maybe making a decision over the next 2 days on whether to pick a guy or, you know, maybe you go with one guy over the other because you know that there's going to be a really good development opportunity in the coming months?
Yep. It certainly plays a role in the decision-making, and you can't bank again, like I said, on what's going to happen in the future. There's a reality where we've had a unique opportunity due to some of the hockey that has gone on in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League or in Europe to get additional looks at players from last year's draft class. And in many cases, guys have taken a significant step, largely due to physical development. But one thing I've talked to our guys about is it doesn't mean that someone you haven't seen hasn't taken the same step. And that's where the value of being able to look on last year's work, that's where it lies, because then you can see how things, what opinions were held at that point, see how things have progressed for certain players. Check in on guys again through the interview process, keep tabs on the development that has occurred from them physically, and kind of see where you get to, but you don't want to go one way or the other way in a hard direction, because that could also leave the opportunity for some mistakes to be made.
Jeremiah, thanks for joining us. This is Mike Pockler from HockeyBuzz.com. Do you have boots on the ground in Europe? If so, how many scouts do you have out there? And how is the pandemic affecting their ability to scout various players?
Yeah, we do have one scout in Europe currently. It's just like everything else. I don't want to be repetitive, but it changes on a day-to-day basis. We get alerts from levels all over in terms of restrictions, and some of them happen the day of games where a certain amount of people outside of family members could be allowed at games, and then that gets changed. So it's being monitored closely, and it does change on a daily basis.
I was wondering if you could run down the differences and similarities between Jake Sanderson and Jamie Drysdale, two of the top D, and they could be available to you at number 8.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to get into specifics on guys in terms of similarities and differences. Obviously, two very good defensemen that play at different levels. Both guys that are going to have a strong ability to impact the game at higher levels. The attention they've got has been earned. Both of them have extensive experience representing their country and are strong character guys. Different in some ways, similar in others, but I expect both guys to be, you know, sought after guys in the first round.
Jeremiah, Joe Yarden, free agent writer. The draft weekend, draft days are always the big reward for the scouting department. For you, which positions get you most excited for this draft? Which areas do you see as most exciting?
In terms of round picks?
Total talent, available talent that will be around, which areas got you to be, you know, say like, all right, I'm excited to get into this because we got a shot to get a lot of these types of guys.
Yep. Well, I think first and foremost, obviously the first round is exciting because you have availability of the largest portion of the player pool that makes up this draft class. But I do think there are areas at every part of this draft to get excited about, and it just varies a little bit. And like I go back to the line I gave you guys earlier where we asked the guys to dream a little bit. Different parts of the draft, you have to start dreaming a little bit more, and you might be looking for a trade. And if you can build that excitement and it's backed up by character and belief, it does make it exciting. And if you have a firm process for your organization, you can lead yourself in certain areas to be excited. And I think that's fun for everyone involved. It's good for scouts to get passionate. And we've seen that in all areas of this draft, which makes me optimistic for the next 2 days.
Hi, John Vogel again. Obviously, the staff size is a little different than it used to be. What have been the opportunities or drawbacks to having this staff size? And just what has this opportunity meant for you to lead a staff?
Yep. Through this? Number one, focused meetings has been one of the things. Clarity with fewer amount of voices than the start of last year came with. Guys have heightened sense of responsibility. I also think that it's been unique to tweak a process through video, because when you're live scouting, you go to a game, you fill out a game report. That's a snapshot, which is obviously a value, but you can watch three games of players in a row and fill out one game report and get closer to reality in many cases too, and be more efficient and quote unquote cover more ground than you could if you were actually covering ground. So that is one thing that stood out immediately. Sometimes it takes you more time to get an opinion built when you're in person. And that wasn't the case from this perspective. So that's been good in terms of managing a staff. It's been good and creating tweaks to the way information was going to be interpreted was able to be accomplished. There's going to be further work done in terms of tweaks we make to the scouting process moving forward. But it's been good. And one of the things that's been great is just the buy-in and acceptance of looking at the whole crew again for guys that have already gone through it once in many cases. It's been a lot of work. It's really only been a little over 3 months. It seems like yesterday, and it seems like a very long time ago, but it's been great.
Hi, Jeremiah, Mike Harrington again. I agree with your earlier statement wholeheartedly. You can't get into need-based drafting for the most part. This isn't the NFL. You're not going to get immediate help. But given that, do you look at this draft coming up that this organization right now really needs to augment its forward group as a whole, and that should probably be one of the bigger priorities you're looking at?
No, I think my answer before answers that. I mean, we're looking for the guys that have the best potential to impact the game in the NHL and guys that we have belief in. To deviate from that on a need-based perspective could cause you to reach in certain cases, and could cause for you to take a guy you might believe in a little bit less sometimes. We want to be cognizant of guys' path and how long we project them to take to reach the NHL, because it is important to get help through the draft. That's why it's done to begin with. But I think that make decisions solely based on that is something we're not going down the road of.
Hi, Jeremiah, Ryan Kennedy once again. When all the dust settles here, you know, obviously it has only been a couple of months, but what would be the ideal size for your scouting staff?
There's no ideal size at this point. We're continuing to evaluate things and what our coverage will look like moving forward. If you go across the entire league, you're going to see staffs of very different sizes. I do like a little bit of intimacy in terms of the amount of people in the room and the communication, but I also like to have multiple opinions, especially when things open up and we get back to live viewings, and the opportunity for crossover and different guys seeing the same players is obviously increased as you grow in size a little bit. So I think it's a healthy balance that can get out of whack in both directions. But there's not a set number in my mind. We want to have qualified and passionate people that can buy into a process. And I think that comes first and foremost.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.